Welcome to the My Egg Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. This is a special show today because today is our 100th episode. I get to celebrate our milestone by being at the Western Egg Processors Association meeting in Monterey. The meeting continues today. In our show, we'll hear from two of the people I got to chat with during the meeting on Thursday. We'll talk with Roger Isom and also Michael Kelly, who discussed labor issues with me. But we start today with the person who created My Ag Life, President and CEO of JCS Marketing, Jason Scott. So when you came up with the idea to have a broadcast version partner that goes with your three magazines, what were you thinking and how has that worked out?
Great question, Sabrina. It was interesting because when I dreamed up My Ag Life, the first thing I did was I went to my team and I said, hey, I want you guys to look into to see if this domain's available. And I got a bunch of blank stares, like, what is Jason up to now? And so the idea behind My Ag Life was to be to be all things for agriculture in terms of we wanted a platform where we could talk about specialty crops outside of tree nuts and the other three magazines that we publish. And so this gives us a more broader opportunity to talk about specialty crops, animal health issues, and just major issues that we're being faced with in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. And California agriculture is so diverse. We have all of our specialty crops, we have such a big dairy industry, we have livestock, we have so much going on in California agriculture. This really gives you an opportunity and the whole team to come together and go beyond what the magazines were doing.
Right, absolutely. This is a great platform for listeners and watchers, right? Because My Ag Life is, we have videos, we have podcasts, we have this daily news report. My Ag Life has education. There's this whole major platform that we're able to provide agriculture professionals all across California and all across the nation. And frankly, we have a global presence. We're starting to get people from other countries tuning in, watching our videos, listening to your broadcast. And so we're really excited about being able to get the word out there in this new way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, I've really enjoyed that we can cover such a variety of topics through the daily news report. And we talk about pesticides, we talk about regulation, we talk about taxes, we talk about drought and water, of course. We talk about crop issues, we talk about labor. There's so much going on in California agriculture, and we get to hit all of those topics. It's an interview-based show where we have guests on several times in each episode, and we have a news segment in there too, so you can get your agriculture news right there in your podcast and your online listening. What other things are you planning?
Yeah, so we want to continue to build upon the solid foundation that we've established. We're looking at offering more content for our listeners. We want to increase the amount of videos, the different types of commodities that we cover. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be a lot more opportunities to consume content, whether it be through video, podcasts, just articles, right? We'll continue to have it be a gateway for all the other publication content that we have. We have the My Ag Life Education Program where we're going to be offering CE credits very soon. So growers and crop consultants can come to My Ag Life and watch and get continuing education units on demand, which is really exciting. In the past, we've been having live virtual events, so we're taking some of that content and offering that as for continuing education. And then we'll have some, we're looking at having, you know, some fresh new education. So there's going to be so many ways you can take in content, get education, and learn and grow and be more effective for your farm operations.
Right, and it all comes together at myaglife.com.
Our news brief is up next. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
Welcome back. Here's your news brief for today. The latest U.S. drought monitor shows widespread drought conditions across roughly half of the United States. Warmer than normal temperatures continued their hold on the northern tier of the lower 48, particularly in the northern Great Plains and upper Midwest. Across the north, widespread degradation of drought conditions occurred in areas where heavy rainfall missed. A few areas that received heavy precipitation and saw localized improvements were coastal Oregon and Washington, along with western Montana and eastern Montana, western North Dakota as well. The most severe drought ratings are found in the West region and also in North Dakota. For the Drought Monitor's West region, which covers nine states, the update classifies 55% of the region in extreme drought and 26% in exceptional drought, the most severe category. The drought extends through the northern High Plains states and the upper Midwest to the Great Lakes. With some droughts indicated on the East Coast, the rest of the U.S. is largely free from drought. A pilot program in connection with USDA's Environmental Quality Incentives Program offers assistance for eligible landowners in four states impacted by drought. Rod Bain reports.
Ag and forest landowners in four drought-plagued western states now have available new USDA Environmental Quality Incentives Program funds to help alleviate immediate impacts. Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby says the almost $42 million in EQIP funding is broken into two segments.
$11.8 million is specifically for the drought-related practices.
While the remaining funding is part of a 2018 Farm Bill program called Conservation Incentive Contracts, implemented for the rest of the fiscal year as a pilot program for producers in Arizona, California, Colorado, and Oregon before nationwide implementation takes place next fiscal year.
And these incentives will help them either help pay for the things that they've installed or maybe sometime make an improvement to some of the practices that they're installing.
Eligible producers have until July 12th to sign up for this offering through local USDA service centers. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Trade Representative Catherine Tai returned to the U.S. Thursday following a successful trip to Europe. Tai, along with counterparts from the European Union and the United Kingdom, agreed to suspend tariffs caused by disagreements over aircraft. Tai announcing the agreement with the U.K. on Thursday says both the EU and U.K. and the U.S. will establish working groups on large civil aircraft. Each side intends not to impose countermeasures for a period of 5 years, starting on July 4th. Countermeasures in the dispute in the past included imposing tariffs on U.S. agriculture and food products. House Agriculture Committee Chair David Scott, a Georgia Democrat, says the announcement is welcome and will certainly set the stage for important future bilateral agreements between the U.S. and our European allies. The gap between those who have high-speed internet access and those who don't appears to be wider than previously thought. Gary Crawford has more.
A new broadband coverage map just released by the White House shows far more Americans than previously estimated do not have high-speed internet access. The new map uses more sources of data than previous maps, and on that score,
you're going to see maps from some of the private sector folks who tell you that there's a 90% coverage.
But Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told a Senate Appropriations panel that in some cases, private maps claimed full area coverage if only one person in the region had access. So Vilsack says actual coverage, in other words,
real service as opposed to sort of service on paper,
is not 90%.
But the reality is about 64% of America has adequate access. That means that a large part of America does not.
With the biggest coverage gaps in rural areas, Vilsack said with the current money being spent every year to close those gaps,
it will take many, many, many years to actually get the job done.
He says what's needed is to get some
serious resources behind this effort.
At least $100 billion. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow Thursday announced a hearing titled Examining Markets, Transparency, and Prices from Cattle Producer to Consumer. The Michigan Democrat, along with the committee's ranking Republican John Bozeman of Arkansas, scheduled the hearing for the afternoon of Wednesday, June 23rd. Cattle market transparency is priority for cattle producers as disruptions in the market, along with pandemic-related issues, developed. Legislation such as the Cattle Market Transparency Act seeks to correct the disruptions and improve trade for cattle producers. The Deputy Secretary of Agriculture addressed several newsworthy topics in a media call with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Stephanie Ho has the story.
Deputy Agriculture Secretary Jewel Brunat addressed a range of issues in a recent media call with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. The first question she was asked focused on USDA's plans for climate-smart agriculture.
This is not something that will happen through regulation. We're going to have our farmers and ranchers and landowners closely engaged as we make decisions about practices and opportunities for our farmers and ranchers to really meet the climate change goals.
She stressed that USDA's efforts will be farmer-based.
We need to develop a strategy that works for all of our producers and landowners. And we have existing USDA programs, CRP and EQIP, that we can leverage to ensure that we utilize those programs to assist farmers and ranchers. We need to support new and better markets, voluntary markets. You probably heard about carbon credits and a carbon bank.
She pointed to another climate-related issue, wildfires.
How do we develop resilient strategies for addressing wildfires and managing our forests effectively? And of course, we're going to rely heavily on research at USDA.
Meanwhile, with cyber attacks against JBS and Colonial Pipeline in the news, the Deputy Agriculture Secretary said USDA is stepping up its own data security efforts.
We're going to go through a process within the next 4 months. One, you know, how do we add two-factor authentication to make sure that there aren't any vulnerable spots, and not only within FSA, but within the other program areas of USDA.
Cybersecurity is important because
we house a lot of private and sensitive data at USDA regarding farmers and ranchers. That's both information we obtain from them and information we provide to them.
Another hot topic in the news is the Waters of the U.S. rule, which is being handled by the Environmental Protection Agency.
When you're talking about issues like Waters of the U.S., we want to make sure at all times that when decisions are made by partnering agencies that could adversely affect our farmers and ranchers, that we want to be at the table, and we are always at the table.
She noted there is a lot to discuss with the rule as it moves forward.
And one thing that Secretary Vilsack has said to me is, do not be afraid to speak up. So I see it in my role that when decisions are made that adversely affect American agriculture, it is my job to speak up.
And finally, she had good news about agricultural trade and exports.
I'm just really happy to say, you know, our quarterly ag trade forecast projects farm exports at $164 billion. That's a 21% increase over farm exports last year.
She said the agricultural trade resilience is especially impressive because of the global pandemic. The top overseas buyer for U.S. agricultural products is China, but she added that other important markets include Canada, Mexico, Japan, and the European Union. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The Foundation for Food and Agriculture Research recently awarded a $10 million grant supporting U.S. Dairy's Net Zero Initiative. Announced Thursday, the funding will support a six-year project titled Dairy Soil and Water Regeneration. The project focuses on building soil health to reduce greenhouse gases and improving water quality, along with enabling new economic benefits. The research will provide measurement-based assessments of dairy's greenhouse gas footprint for feed production and set the stage for new market opportunities related to carbon, water quality, and soil health, that according to Dairy Management, Inc. That's our news brief for today. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. That is there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
We are back out at the Western Agricultural Processors Association annual meeting, where I caught up with the president and CEO, Roger Isom.
Roger, we are here at the annual meeting for the Western Ag Processors Association. You and I have spoken on the phone several times, and of course we've met in person before in years prior, but here we are together in person, along with hundreds of other people here at this meeting. How does that feel?
It feels great, and I think at our reception last night, it was really the consensus among everybody that we're finally able to get together and talk face to face and see everybody. And our convention is a little unique in that we have all four nuts. Typically, each commodity is by itself. So ours is generally that way anyway, because we're walnut guys are talking to pistachio guys, talking to almond guys. But just that feeling of, you know, been away from everybody for almost a year and a half, I think was a great feeling.
Right. So many important topics on the agenda for the meeting. Tell me about a couple of that we'll be hearing about.
One is energy rates. They've gone through the roof. We're going to see kind of what the future is. And so we've got Michael Bocadoro from the Ag Energy Consumers Association, which is, that's what they do, is work on electrical rates. And so we're going to hear from him. Another big issue that's actually been impacting us for almost a year now, believe it or not, is the export issue through the ports. It has really hamstrung us at a time where everybody's trying to get back up on their feet and commodities are moving and prices are somewhat decent, but we're having to pay storage fees and demurrage fees, and just we can't get going. This seems really difficult. So we're going to have somebody from the port and somebody from the logistics industry to really talk about how they see it, what's happening right now, and really how do we solve this? How do we get out of this mess? So those are probably the two biggest ones right now.
Right. Absolutely. And then you also have a couple of lawmakers coming.
We do. You know, when you look at the future of California, where are we and what's the makeup of the legislature? We can either give up and move to Texas or we can try to fight. And so what we wanted to do was bring somebody from both sides of the aisle and say, give us, you know, what can we do? We should be farming here. This is the best farmland in the world, the best growing conditions in the world. We want to be here. We need to be here. So what can we do? And what advice can they give us to try to navigate through what has definitely become much, much more urban than rural. And the decisions that are made, whether it's water, which is a huge issue, or electrical rates, it's people that don't have any agriculture in their district at all. So Autumn Burke, Assemblywoman Autumn Burke, is one, doesn't have one single acre of agriculture in her district. We're gonna hear from her, but she's actually come to the Valley. She's been to some of our operations to see and understand, and we've been to her district and that to see some of the issues they face. So it's a trying to understand both sides of it, and maybe we can make a connection.
Right. You know, I wanted to ask you, the last interview that you and I did together, we talked about the pesticide mill assessment, and I want to know how you feel about how that turned out.
Well, it hasn't turned out yet. We're still not happy. It's in the negotiations right now as part of the budget process. It's a tax. I don't care how you slice it. It's a tax. It's a tax increase at a time that we really don't need to see that. Was it due? Was there an increase due? Yes, there was. But for us in the tree industry, without getting too far down in the weeds, it was going to more than double the mill assessment on us. And it was unfair. It wasn't across the board. It was geared more towards certain things. And it was, they were saying it was a way to try to discourage us from using more harmful pesticides. In our case, in the Trina series, it's fumigants. There's no alternative. So it wouldn't have, all it would have done was increase our taxes and wouldn't have solved their problem. All along, and this is one of the things we try to convey in all of the regulatory things, is sit down with us. Is there a way we can do and get to what they're after, not just this, hey, let's tax them until they move type mentality?
With the issues that we talked about just in this short interview with the assessment, with the talking about ports, energy rates, lawmakers, how do all of those issues come together for an organization like the Western Ag Processors Association?
So I'm not sure what you mean, how they come together, because it's really why we have the staff we have, is because we have to address all those issues. We realize that we use electricity, we use pesticides, we use water. We just have to be able to have educated staff that can deal with those issues and help our members navigate through it. And on the other side, be proactive. You know, what things can we do to reduce pesticide use? What things can we do to reduce water use? Do it better. It's always the challenge for us, but that's really what drives us.
Well, I want to thank you for your time, and I know that you need to go spend some time talking with people, seeing people in person. So thank you. I appreciate you sitting down
with us.
You're
welcome. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Coming up next, I talk with another WAPA member about labor issues. We'll be right back.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Welcome back. Finally today, I talked with Michael Kelly, President and CEO of the Central California Almond Growers Association. Here's our conversation.
Central California Almond Growers Association is the largest almond sheller in the world. We have four almond shellers that are right in the middle of the state, Fresno County.
Okay, so I'm actually from Fresno County. I know it very well. So tell me a little bit more about the association.
Well, we started in 1963. This is our 58th year. We have about 450 members that deliver their almonds into us. 358 of those are active, which means our actual membership has actually dropped a little bit over the last few years because of consolidation and because of some growers that have gotten out of business or retired.
Okay. One of the major issues that everybody is seeing right now, but also in the almond industry, is problems with labor. What are you hearing and what are you seeing?
Well, we've had a really good example is we opened up our applications for seasonal hires about 3 weeks ago. And actually, it's pretty close to going on 4 weeks now. And we were down 70% on applications that had been filled out by people that come into the office. So it was very, very concerning. We're doing everything we can to try and put signage out, do LinkedIn, do social media. We've never had to do that before. So this is very unusual for us. We're actually calling the people that worked for us last year to see if they will come back. That's been positive. The seasonals that work seem to want to come back. They just don't want to come back right now. So I think in the future, you know, it's going to be something that our business is really going to have to contend with for the season ahead. It's very disconcerting, but I think in the end we'll probably be okay, but it's because of all of the efforts we're doing now of engagement to try and get them in.
There are a lot of people speculating about what's causing the labor issues currently, and I don't want to perpetuate any rumors, but are you hearing reasons why it is so hard to get labor at the moment?
Well, primarily the reasons that I believe, and we're hearing this from the people that we talk to, is the checks that are being sent out by the government.
Okay.
And that's going to go away on September 9th. So hopefully we'll get in more of a better environment then, as long as they don't continue those programs. The other thing, too, is genuine fear. There's a lot of fear amongst some of the workers that are out there because of what they're hearing on the media that causes them concern. I think a lot of that is being at the a lot of our legislative people have told us that, that they're hearing a lot of that. And something that I am concerned with when we get into a normal environment, because some of these employees are so scared, they don't know really what's up and what's down. So I think they'd rather stay home. And clearly, the checks from the government help them make that decision.
Right. So double-edged sword might not be the right analogy, but so many things working toward keeping that problem consistent. You talked about in September when that program ends. How late is that going to be for the industry, or will that be on time?
Well, we're probably going to start showing around the 6th of August. So, and then we'll ramp up, and we'll be blowing and going by the 25th of August. And so it's going to be very difficult until we get past that 9th of September day, until we know whether we're going to have enough people to run all of our shelters. That's really sad to say. We've never had this situation before, but one of the remedies would be that we just don't run one of the shelters until we have enough people to run it. And that's a position we don't want to be in. We have 4 shelters. Most shelling operations only have 1. So it's quite a balancing act to try and make sure we have enough people, because you have to have the right people, because there's a lot of safety concerns. You can't be short on staff.
Let's address the fears that you talked about. What can we be telling potential employees who are afraid to come back to work?
I think, according to the CDC, these vaccines are safe. Everybody needs to get vaccinated. There are especially those of underlying conditions, and there are procedures that are in place to keep people safe at work. We have adopted all of those procedures, and I think people can come back to work knowing that they have a safe environment to work in that is actually being overseen by the county health departments. So I think we're in a much, much better place, especially with 50% of the population having been vaccinated, and even more so as we get closer to the harvest season. We get into that realm where we'll probably get to herd immunity by the time the harvest season starts. So what is the issue?
Right. And we really need that workforce to be available.
Well, and the other side of the coin, too, is there's a lot of crops that are being plowed under right now because people aren't able to work those fields. There's just not the labor force in place. And the tragedy of that is we've got a lot of people that are hungry.
Right.
And yet we're destroying viable food that people could have to eat because there's not enough people to harvest it.
Right. And that's the thing. Every farmer who I've spoken to wants to be able to feed people. That's what farmers do. But there is this wall up that is blocking them being able to do that.
Right.
And it's certainly not by choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Well, I want to thank you for your time. I appreciate your thoughts on a very important issue. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you again to Michael and for Roger for their time, and thank you to everyone who has supported us during our first 100 episodes of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.